2012-1288. Mr. Overhauser, you're going to teach us about flitches.
May it please the Court.
Which look like filches, but I assume it's not.
Thank you, Your Honor. There are six claim terms at issue, and they're listed on page 19 of the opening brief along with the associated proposed definitions. I'm going to be referring to that page. However, I submit that most of the issues...
Six claim terms. In other words, the Court got it all wrong?
Yes, Your Honor. However...
One of the things I found very confusing is she construed a whole bunch of terms, and then you all said, well, in light of your construction on all these different terms, there's no infringement. But what I find it hard to do is to figure out, are any of these terms dispositive, and if so, of what? Meaning, for example, why do I have to reach all six of these terms? It cannot be the case that I have to reach necessarily all six of these terms. I just am not accustomed to seeing an order that is quite as ambiguous as this one about what resolves what.
I appreciate where you're coming from, Your Honor. These six terms are ambiguous, are dispositive of each of the individual patents. I refer you to the final judgment.
Is in the final judgment, for example, she'll say, well, if it's limited to tapered, then it's dispositive of this one claim in this one patent, at least this one claim in this one patent. If I were to find that this was limited to tapered, doesn't it resolve all the claims? I don't see, if I found that there's a disclaimer and that all these claims are affected by the tapered limitation, it seems to me that results in summary judgment entirely on just that one limitation. Am I wrong?
That would be incorrect, Your Honor.
Why? Are you accusing products of theirs that aren't using tapered trunks?
Yes.
Oh, you are?
Yes. Just as one example, in the final judgment, which is in the appendix at A035, the final judgment found that the interpretation of the word dogs was dispositive of claims 5, 33, 32 of the 938 patent and claim 6 of the 843.
Sure, I get that, but I think tapered is also dispositive, isn't it? I mean, the question isn't whether or not you can win infringement on dogs and also, you could also win it on tapered. I mean, non-infringement. It just seems to me that any of these could be dispositive.
I think the way the final judgment is worded, that would not be the case.
Well, I'm asking you, you said yes, you're accusing products of theirs that are not tapered, limited to tapered trees.
Yes, but you have to understand there are a variety of different claims here. There are claims directed towards methods of cutting flitches. There are claims directed towards flitch preparation machines, veneer slicing machines. And I don't think you can make a generalization that if we resolve the issue of whether a flitch is tapered or not, it resolves
the issue. But is not a flitch part of every claim?
I believe a flitch is recited in each claim.
And isn't the claim construction of flitch including a taper? So if we affirm that, isn't that conclusive of every claim that has flitch in it?
No, but, and again, I say that it's not conclusive because there were some claims for which summary judgment was granted due to claim construction of a word that did not have flitch in it.
In other words, she didn't premise certain results on flitch.
But if, in fact, her conclusion that everything was limited to a tapered flitch, then couldn't she have premised every one of the summary judgment rulings on that fact?
I'm not sure I could speculate on that.
Were there any accused devices that used a tapered flitch?
Yes.
Well, I think the question is, are there any accused devices that don't use a tapered flitch, right? Is that the
which way accused devices?
Yeah.
I would simply submit, Your Honor, that In the lower court, we got to the point where we were going to stipulate to summary judgment. The parties worked very diligently to craft a proposed final judgment order that would ensure the parties would get the maximum bang for their appellate buck, so to speak.
Well, this is like a Christmas wish list. It's like you're sitting on Santa's lap saying, I'd like all these terms construed, please. I mean, I want to know which ones are the dispositive ones.
They all are, Your Honor. But I'm trying to make things easy for you. I would...
Wow.
We'll be the judges of that. Do you want to go on to the next point?
Yeah. My point, I'm going to just skip over why the foot should not be required to... let me just summarize my argument on Fritsch, which is to say that I think the strongest argument is that of claim differentiation. That doctrine says that a dependent claim that adds a limitation gives rise to a presumption that the limitation is not present in the independent or parent claim. And for example, claim 34 of the 995 patent says the method of claim 13, wherein the outer surface of the Fritsch is taken. 34 dependent claim, that's the taper limitation. Therefore, claim differentiation says that Fritsch in the parent claim cannot be construed to mean the taper Fritsch. Now, the reason I think the court's job is easier is because I think if it concludes that a Fritsch should not be construed to require a taper, it has a ripple effect on the next four claim terms on page 19. Specifically, each of these next four claim terms include the phrase of varying depths. Stay-log engaging zone has of varying depths, predetermined pattern has of varying depths, predetermined pattern has of varying depths. Linear producing zone doesn't explicitly recite of varying depths, but it is implicitly there because of linear producing zone.
That comes from being tapered, right?
The of varying depths? Yes. The lower court added that limitation because she misconstrued, in our view, the fact that a Fritsch had to be tapered. We think that was error. I would simply point out that an even stronger argument for not requiring the of varying depth limitation in those four claim terms is that the patents explicitly say otherwise.
Are you saying that we need to agree with you on tapered in order to agree with you on of varying depths?
No, I'm not. And there's an independent basis for striking of varying depth. That independent basis is that the patents specifically recite that, quote, holes having equal and minimum depth, unquote. So, and that is in the record in the patent at A280. Column 8, 36 to 42. So obviously, if the patents recite holes having equal depth, they're not varying depth.
And so when you have holes that are not of varying depth, but you have a tapered Fritsch, there is an alternative mechanism to...
Yes, there's an alternative mechanism to orienting it so it is parallel to the knife.
You tilt it, right? You tilt it.
Exactly. So the bottom line, there are two independent bases for eliminating the varying depth limitation from these four intermediate claims. First one is to just say the court got it wrong on taper Fritsch. The second one is to note that the patent specifically recites that holes may be of equal depth. That leaves us with the last claim term.
The dogs.
The dogs.
Who let the dogs out? Go on.
The lower court construed dogs to be a device that is without movable parts.
Very funny. No dogs that don't move.
Exactly. But if you look at the patents themselves, they describe a dog as, quote, dogs are moved toward each other to pinch the flinch there between.
Well, that doesn't mean they have movable parts. If the dog moves, that doesn't mean movable parts of the dog, does it?
Well, I think it does. I don't see how you can pinch without moving something. And in fact, we include a picture from straight out of the patent on page 24 of our opening brief. It's a cross section of a stay log with two dogs, and the Fritsch is on top in yellow. I'll concede that the dog on the left is stationary, it doesn't move. But the dog on the right does move. Particularly the top part of the dog moves.
Is that the one with a hinge or a pivot?
Yeah, it pivots based on the
action. So it moves. That doesn't mean it has movable parts within itself.
Well, the top part moves.
That's a separate dog, isn't it?
I don't believe so, Your Honor.
Is there anything in the specification anywhere that would suggest that the dogs should be limited to non-movable part dogs?
No.
No. Where did that, how did she come up with that then? I mean, where did it come from?
That is discussed in our reply brief at, if I can find it real quick.
I mean, is it inherent that dogs generally don't have movable parts in this industry?
No.
I don't know. I'm just asking.
A dog is just a clamp. A dog means a clamp, but it has some type of teeth or serrations on it so that it grips whenever it's gripping more tightly. It's like a, you know, like a Doberman pincher.
Okay.
That's where the name came from.
Might that be a harmless
error? Did you just growl at the court?
I apologize, Your Honor. But you can't have a dog that doesn't move. It makes no sense. It has no moving parts. It's not going to work in the first place. And
you can have ones that don't hunt, but just ones that don't move is the problem, right?
Yeah, and I guess it may be in the in our opening brief where we cite the part of the Markman hearing where the court came up with this language. We quote some exchange between counsel and the judge, and we just think the judge got it wrong.
So back to my original question, suppose I agree with you on some of them, that she got some of these wrong, but not others. So we have to just vacate and remand, and she's got to go back and kind of start over. That's the deal. There's nothing among these that...
Well, you know, I think that all of the claim terms should be modified as we've argued in the future.
You're into your rebuttal time. You wish to save it?
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Swift. So you will not flinch from telling us how he's wrong about Flitch?
Absolutely not, Your Honor. May it please the court, I truly am here to make your life easier, unlike my co-counsel or my opposing counsel.
We do not judge cases by whether counsel makes it easier for us, but please do.
Okay.
You want to strip away the veneer from the summary judgment motion?
I'm going to do that for you. You know, part of this case for us is the course of construction of Flitch. I mean, it really is. It's in all 23 asserted claims.
But if I agree with you that every claim is limited to a tapered Flitch, even the ones that don't say tapered, based on disclaimer, it doesn't seem to end this case because this crazy stipulation that you all entered into is based on six different terms, and she says, well, tapered resolves this one claim of this one patent dispositively, and it doesn't necessarily say whether it resolves all the claims.
We think it does because...
Well, you think the stipulation doesn't say so. Well, so how do I...
Let me address that. The district court ruled in its claim construction that the term flitched applied to every asserted claim. Every asserted claim.
Well, sure it does, but that doesn't mean that every product that's been accused of infringement is covered by
We don't process untapered flitch. That's all we do is
he
process.
He said you did. Judge O'Malley asked the question. I got tapered and untapered mixed up, but he said you
we
did.
Just, we
he
just
said
cut,
he's accusing.
We just cut untapered flitches. If we don't infringe...
Isn't every flitch tapered to some extent? I mean, these are trees. I have seldom found trees that are completely cylindrical. I mean, at some point...
Absolutely. We remove that top-to-bottom taper before we cut our veneer. So if we don't infringe claim 23 because we don't cut from...
Well, it seems like you're going to have to go back and argue that if you survive and are successful on tapered because he says that he does accuse. He says there are claims that... He claims that he's accused products of yours that are tapered, so.
He may claim that, but if we don't infringe 23 because we don't have a tapered flitch, we don't infringe anything.
So you're saying that the apparatus claim, you have the exact same machine, performs in the exact same way, and you're saying we have to define what the machine is by what you put into it?
No.
I mean, you could put a pig in that machine, it would still work the same way.
It works the same way, but it lies in the fact of how you're mounting the flitch on the stay lock. We mount our flitch so that We've taken the taper off the top, and we mount it so it's flat against the stay lock. It's parallel. It's not canted like the invention requires. So if we don't infringe claim 23, because we
but
don't...
But not all the claims. I mean, if you take the claims out independently, or you separate out the patents, like the 828, I mean, it talks about the retaining or the providing. It describes it in a way that has nothing to do with whether it's tapered or untapered.
But it's still, the claims still require flitches. And the court has determined that flitch includes a taper, and we don't.
And yet you concede what you have is a flitch, but it's untapered.
That's correct. And people have cut untapered flitches for 70 years.
So that one skilled in the art would understand that flitch could relate to taper or not.
That's true, but in the context of these patents, the patentee specifically defined the term to include the taper. Then during prosecution, he further, consistent with that definition, told the patent office that, hey, my invention only deals with taper flitches. So that's why wheel doesn't apply, because wheel doesn't deal with
taper
flitches.
Wait, so that means if you're using his apparatus on a tapered flitch, then there's going to be infringement. But if you're using his apparatus on a sawed-off, squared-off flitch that doesn't have tapering, there's not going to be infringement, even though it's an apparatus claim?
That's correct. Because all the claims require flitch. They all do. And the court has determined that flitch means tapered flitch, consistent with the specification, consistent with the prosecution histories.
But if your flitch starts out tapered, right, before you cut it? It's just not tapered when you put it in the machine.
Well, the process works where, you're right, the logs have a natural taper. We split that log down the middle, and then we remove the top taper. And at that point in time, that's when we send it to be processed, cut in the veneer. And if you look at the claims, again, they all have the claim term flitch. And the court has determined that flitch means tapered flitch. So. And if we're not cutting taper flitch, or if we're not putting the holes in the bottom of a taper flitch, then we're not meeting any of the claims.
How? So the use restriction? Is that what you're saying?
I don't know if I'm saying that or not, Your Honor. But based upon that question, I think probably that's what we are saying. It is kind of a use restriction. I mean, the claims either require a taper flitch or they don't. The district court says they do. And that construction, by the way, in the court's orders, the court's claim construction order, made it clear that construction applied to all the asserted claims.
Right, and let me. So you don't see any distinction between these patents?
The distinction is whether you're cutting veneer from a paper flitch, or you're getting that flitch ready, that paper flitch ready to be cut. I mean, that's the distinction. I mean, if you look at the specifications...
Well, there are two different inventions here that we're talking about, right? Two different, at least, advances that they claim, correct? One having to do with saving the better veneer, and the other having to do with making sure that you get as much of the veneer at the end as possible, right?
They both deal with the concept of getting the better veneer. But I don't think the patents separate them in a context of you can use one for one type of flitch and one for another type of flitch. The patents all and the claims all require tapered flitches, and
the claims don't all use the word tapered. And in fact, as you pointed out through the doctrine of claim differentiation, some do and some don't.
That's correct. But the patentee defined flitch to include a taper.
To include a taper doesn't.
That makes it a taper flitch, right?
You mean to mean taper, as opposed to include.
I don't see the distinction, Your Honor. I mean, a flitch is formed by cutting a log down the middle.
Well, the distinction is if a flitch can be tapered or untapered, okay? And then he has claims that don't use the word tapered, then we should construe that claim as applying to both tapered and untapered flitches. And as such, they would apply to what you do because you are processing untapered flitches.
Okay, in the context, if the patentee had not defined the term flitch to include a taper, and he has done that.
But I think you're misunderstanding Judge Lurie's distinction, which I think is quite frankly dispositive of your case on this point.
You don't mean to use the word include. Includes implies being generic, and as Judge Moore said, including both tapered and untapered. You mean it to mean tapered.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Again, flitch means tapered flitch. It's used interchangeably throughout the look at the prosecution histories in these.
But you would agree that the general definition of flitch to somebody of skill in the art is not limited to tapered. In fact, most flitches that are used for making veneer prior to this are untapered, like the method you use, right? So that the ordinary meaning of the word flitch to one of skill in the art doesn't limit it to tapered. You believe through disclaimer we get to tapered.
I believe through disclaimer and through the way he's defined it in his specification.
As his own lexicographer.
Yes, absolutely.
So show me in the 995 patent. That's the one I have handy. I know that the specs are nearly the same and everything, but can you show me where you think that definition comes in exactly so I can see the best possible lexicographer definition?
Yes, that would be in the appendix on A243. It's a 995 patent, column 1, lines 56 through 61.
I'm looking at 137 patent, and the specs are apparently the same, because the tree trunk is naturally tapered. One end of the flitch is thicker than the other end. Is that?
That's correct. As a result of this taper, the veneer producing zone of the flitch is first a conical, that is trapezoidal and cross-section when viewed from the side of the flitch or from the knife.
I certainly understand what conical means, but I had a little trouble figuring out what frusto conical was. What does that mean?
if you look at the frustum of a cone, or just take a cone, for instance.
Like an ice cream cone. Let's
ice
go
cream
with
that. Cone, all right. But it's squared off at the top.
Uh-huh.
So you got a shape like this. And if you cut that down the middle and turn it on its side, that's a crustal conical shape.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
And then if you take a slice out of the middle of that, look at it, it's trapezoidal in shape. That make sense?
Not entirely, but I'm going to believe you on it.
Okay. that language, Your Honor, is found in all the patents in suit. They all define flitch the same way. And then during prosecution of the patents, in three of those prosecutions, again, they specifically limit flitch to his inventions to tapered flitches.
There are distinctions, though, between the patents in terms of what they describe as the present invention or the title of the patent, even the description of the field of invention. They're not all the same, are they?
They're all dealing with the same technology, but coming at it from a different standpoint. One might have to deal with how you're preparing the tapered flitch so it can be mounted so its outer surface is parallel to the slicing knife, like the 828 patent. And then others deal with actually cutting veneer from the tapered flitch. So again, that outer tapered surface is parallel to the slicing knife. So you get these full-length slices as soon as you start slicing.
But the prosecution histories are even distinct as it relates to these patents.
The
prosecution histories are even distinct as it relates to these patents. There are different reasons for distinguishing the prior art that are given, are there not?
They all state that the invention is directed toward tapered flitches, unlike the wheel patent.
Right.
Each of them state that, Your Honor.
Right. The 828?
The prosecution histories are in the 619, the 938, and the 187. And our position is, according to this court's case law, is that disclaimers made within patents of the same family affect the construction of the terms, the like terms, in all the patents in the family.
All right, well, given that there are different types of claims in the same patents, I think that your friend would concede that there is a difference over the prior art as it relates to one aspect of their invention, which is the fixing the tapering problem. But there's another aspect of the invention as well. And doesn't the use of holes as opposed to the channels underneath give you an advantage in terms of how much you can get from a particular flitch, whether it's tapered or not.
The answer is generically is yes, but there's also got to be an understanding that the veneer from that's closer to the core when this second invention seems to take effect, the holes invention, that's poor quality, and so it's not as valuable as the veneer that you get closer to the top of the log. So, or the
bark. Near the bark?
Yes, thank you.
All right.
So
even though the answer to that question is yes, it still doesn't change the fact that he still limited his invention to tapered flitches.
Okay. So you're conceding that you practice one novel aspect of the invention, but you say that doesn't matter because he put a use restriction on that aspect of the invention as well as on the other aspect of the invention.
Well, first of all, I'm not conceding it's not at all, because we have prior art that actually shows the whole invention. That's not before the court, so I'm not going to concede novelty, but I will concede that there is this use restriction on tapered flitches based upon the way he defined it and based upon the way he limited during prosecution.
Mr. Swift, your time is tapering off. Do you have a final thought?
Other than I really admired the beautiful veneer in the courtroom, I think there might have been one point I want to make. This whole point about claim differentiation and claims not limited to preferred embodiment that my opposition seems to really focus on. You know, again, that is qualified by the fact that they've limited, they've defined flitch to mean a certain thing, and that definition is what governs in this case. And they've also, consistent with that definition, made disclaimers during prosecution of patents in this case. I didn't want to point out for the court that we had cited an online dictionary during our briefing, and opposing counsel had claimed that that was the first time we'd done that. That's not the case. We cite that same online dictionary to A828 in the appendix. And I see my time is up, and I'll finish with that. Thank you.
Good. Thank you, Mr. Swift. Mr. Overhauser has a little more than 3 minutes for rebuttal.
One of the statements made by Mr. Swift was up here in response to a question was he stated that Miller Veneer did not cut tapered flitches. I would direct your court's attention to the appendix at page 067, which is an excerpt of a deposition from Miller sitting in here. Down at the bottom at line 6, question, okay, when did Miller Veneer start cutting tapered flitches, as you say? Answer, other than the test site we had back in 1995 or 96, other than those test pieces, we didn't cut our tapered flitches until February the 2nd of 2004. So I think there is evidence that they cut tapered flitches. At the same time, I would acknowledge that technically that's not the full discourse. Infringement is not an issue, just claim construction.
But what your point, and you're making this to show us that even if we agree that the claims were limited to tapered flitches, it is not dispositive of the case.
Yeah. I think I heard Mr. Swift concede that the spaced hole invention would work on either tapered or untapered flitches, so I'm not going to belabor that point. Unless this court has further questions, I'll waive the remainder of my rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Overhauser. We'll take the case under advisement.